Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Live Vegan Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Leahy, and we are joined by a special guest host today, Brandon Kirkwood. Hey, Brandon.
Sup, compassionate people. That's usually how I start every show on Vegan News.
Awesome. Yeah, we're going to have to put a link in the show notes to Vegan News. Brandon is here because Ben is not feeling well, and his message to the listeners is that vegans are not invincible. Despite what you may think, they sometimes get sick, so he's not feeling well. But we're very happy to have Brandon on the show with us. And we also have a very special guest who has a distinguished history with the animal rights movement, and her name is Joanne MacArthur. Hey, Joanne.
Hey.
She is a professional photographer, a photojournalist, a humane educator, an animal rights activist, and an author. But before we speak to Joanne, I just want to say a couple of words. Today's episode is about bearing witness. We slaughter 3,000 land animals every second worldwide. Humanity has declared war on the most innocent, vulnerable beings on the planet. But all of this will end. That's what this podcast is about. That's what this movement is about. We are here to fight back and end the suffering once and for all. And I truly believe we will be successful in our lifetime. And so what makes Joanne's work so important is that once we get there, once we reach animal liberation, we must always remember where we came from, what we did, how we treated others, as we evolved into a more peaceful, empathetic species. Just as we need to remember the halls of Auschwitz and the poisonous gans of Zyklon B, because it's our history, it defines us. The pictures of boys being attacked by guard dogs during the civil rights movement, or the unknown man who stood in front of a row of tanks in Tiananmen Square in protest of a war, or a picture of sows in gestation crates. But not just the sad moments of humanity's history, we also need to remember the moments of hope and love. Like when a sailor kisses a nurse in Times Square at the end of World War II, or a rescued pig at a sanctuary who touches grass for the first time. These moments are timeless, and they will live on for as long as humanity is successful. So some of you may know Joanne as she stars in and is the inspiration for the award-winning documentary, The Ghosts in Our Machine. But she's perhaps best known for her We Animals project, which is a photography project including pictures from every facet of animal exploitation. And she uses these pictures to educate the public about our relationship with animals. And they're all free to use as long as you are using them to help animals. She has an incredibly artistic view of the world, and she's able to capture the right angle with the right focus and the right background in order to tell the story of what's really happening, and show the viewer a new perspective that would otherwise go unlooked and unnoticed. Her work has been featured in many books and publications, including National Geographic, so there's a very good chance you have seen her pictures, but you had no idea she was the one behind the camera. So we're very pleased and honored to have another investigative journalist on the show. Welcome to the podcast, and thank you for being here, Joanne MacArthur.
Whoa, that was such a great intro. I mean, let's unpack some of that. There was a lot of really good information in there. And thank you for inviting me on. I'm really happy to be here to talk about this. But, you know, you mentioned history and our role in changing history right now. And that's something that I talk about in my work as well. I mean, I want people to remember that what we're doing right now is historical and will be, you know, so to speak, on the walls of museums showing what once was and what should never again be. And
That's how I see your work. Absolutely. It will be on the walls of museums for sure. So how did you get into this kind of work? What inspired you to get behind a camera and take these beautiful pictures?
Well, my love for photography came first, for sure. I was always obsessed with photos, and to get my hands on a camera and start processing film and all of the excitement that comes with that. I mean, for me, the camera was a way to satisfy my curiosity about the world and like a passport into the lives of others. And it allowed me to ask questions and And so I did all sorts of work before I did animal work. And, you know, I'm a professional photographer as well, did a lot of commercial work. I have photographed 600 weddings. And, but, you know, photojournalists are always looking for their story, their unique story that they can tell. And it didn't take long before I realized that I could combine my passions, which was, you know, my love of photography, with my concern for animals. And once I started seeing the invisible animals, as I call them, or the ghosts in our machine, they're everywhere. You know, they're on every street. They are birds kept in cages. They are, you know, bacon breakfast and all these things, you know. So once you start seeing animal use, you can't unsee it, and it's everywhere. And it has made for 15 years of work for me now as I travel the globe, photographing our uses and abuses of animals.
So I'd like to chime in here. What's the worst abuse that you've ever witnessed going around and with your photography? Does one case stick out more than any other, or one particular instance?
Oh, dear. Honestly, I mean, with the work that I do, it's just always extremely confronting because you're meeting individual after individual. And really, how am I to say which has been the worst? I mean, I've seen some horrific things, but you know, going from one cage to the next and seeing birds standing on the bodies of their cage mates, you know, to alleviate the pain in their feet. And I mean, I've seen all sorts of things, but what haunts me is that these animals look back at me. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm just one of the perpetrators. I'm someone who holds all the answers and they have all the questions. And that's the way it is in animal industries, is that they don't know what's going to happen next, or they get used to what's going to happen next. Like, we're taking away their babies or taking away their cage mates.
See it, especially in dairy cows, the way they become broken after the third or fourth child is taken.
Oh gosh. And think of the sows with all the piglets being taken away over and over and over, 6, 7, 8, 9 times before they go to slaughter themselves.
It's absolutely heartbreaking. I myself actually grew up on a farm. It wasn't a factory farm, but, you know, I participated in all this and was told that it was necessary. And I think a lot of people are brainwashed into it, like we all were. It's important to remember where we came from, too.
Wow. And so you made quite a leap going from a farm to your current work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. we're here to talk about you, but it was definitely most of my family thinks I'm crazy at this point.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
It's okay.
I mean that. I'm sorry to hear that, because we, most of us anyway, need, you know, at least a little bit of support from our family, friends, and community.
Well, you know, the thing with veganism is, if you really get into the movement and this isn't just a plant-based diet for you, you start to develop a vegan network, a vegan family, and vegan friends, and everything ties together. And I have people closer to me now that have been by my side through activism, you know, than I've ever had in my entire life. So honestly, I feel blessed to have found veganism, and, you know, part of my reward of living with compassion, like we all should to begin with, is this incredible network that I never even really had when I wasn't vegan.
Wow. Yeah. There is a really strong community, isn't there? I mean, I guess there's a little bit of infighting, but I guess you'd also get that everywhere in any community.
Yeah. You try to stay away from, we were actually, Kevin and I were talking about this before the podcast started. There's always those who are going to exploit, excuse me. There are always those who are going to exploit the drama within anything, and drama always gets more views, and, you know, fake nonsense gets more views, but truth is always a constant. If you provide truth and put that out there and honesty and all that, then it always comes back later down the road, and vice versa. If you lie and you make stuff up and you're a bad person, that's going to come back to you as well. So,
yeah, I try and keep my eye on the prize, which is, you know, just, well, I could say animal liberation, but maybe in a more focused way, I just try to keep my eye on doing what I'm best at, which is, you know, taking pictures and advocating, speaking up for animals in a very gentle way. That's my approach, is to meet people where they're at and be hopeful and joyful. And
it can be really hard, especially, I know, with like PTSD. I read that you had been through that and all that kind of stuff. Have you managed to find a healthy balance and get that under control?
Yeah, I really have.
Sorry, Kelly, I cut you off.
No, it's okay. That's actually what I was going to ask. I wanted to ask about how you deal with the pain of simply observing, because I've felt it myself as an undercover investigator, and a lot of people ask that question. You know, how did you just stand there and watch and not jump in and do something? And I know many times I was inclined to do exactly that, and I'm sure you have been in the same moment, Joanne. How do you deal with that? What are you thinking when you're watching the animal suffering, but all you can really do in that moment is take a picture or take a video?
Yeah, I do find it a bit interesting when, quote unquote, interesting when people go out of their way to write to me to say, you know, I saw you in that movie and why didn't you liberate those animals? And it's like, well, take a moment here. Like, I'm traveling in foreign countries. I've been doing investigative work worldwide. And like, I don't have places to put 200 foxes or 40,000 hens or even like a couple hens. I mean, that's, you know, I would love to liberate them all. And why would anyone assume that I wouldn't? You know, like, I'm going to these great lengths, literally to the ends of the earth, to try and make a difference. So of course I want to liberate animals, but I'm doing, you know, effective work the best way I can, and that's to educate people. And so, yeah, I mean, I have met, truthfully, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of animals. Last week, I was in a country in a broiler farm where there were 300,000 broilers per shed. Incredible. 300 broilers per shed. I was surrounded by carnage. I was surrounded by the dead and dying, because they are just, you know, just like a minor percentage.
Back in there.
Yeah. But where are we? Like, so dealing with PTSD,
direct rescue, we can't direct rescue all the animals, right? But the real question is, how do you deal with it? Like, that's the hard part, I think.
Yeah, how do you decompress?
Everyone knows that we can't rescue all these animals in the most people know that. But really, like, what does Joanne do at night when you're thinking about all the things you've seen?
Yes, and that's something that I've had to face, but I do want to legitimize the trauma that a lot of people go through just by virtue of looking at the stuff that we are shooting, that I'm shooting. You know, I'm putting out these terrible photos and videos, and people can be traumatized even by, you know, witnessing this stuff on Facebook. If you're compassionate and if your eyes are open and you're willing to look and learn and feel, a lot of people are super traumatized, and I think that's a rational response. I think it's a perfectly human and compassionate response. And it is extremely difficult for me, and I have had to learn to deal with it. And I think you have to be a pretty rare and special person to be able to just let it, you know, run off you like water.
I think that's just it. I don't think vegans are able to do that. That's why we're vegan. We can't just let it go away.
Yeah, like, we care so much. However, that caring doesn't have to translate into us thinking about the pigs and the chickens and the cows all the time. It shouldn't translate into us feeling as though we need to suffer along with them, because that is why the animal rights movement is like a rotating door. It's so painful to be here.
Right.
We're not supported. And if we are feeling everything all the time. And so, you know, people come in guns blazing, really impassioned, rightly so, but it's exhausting. And then, you know, they sort of taper off because it's just so, it's too much to handle. And so I did have therapy for dealing with the trauma and the helplessness that comes with not being able to help, you know, the hundreds of thousands or even at this point, the millions of animals that I met. Right. So therapy, but I mean, not everyone can afford therapy. Therapy is an expensive thing. You can find it for free in different cities, which is wonderful, but you can also read books, and you can also, I'll mention a few books, but, you know, it took me a long time to learn to do things that make me happy as well. And this is another motivator in the animal rights movement, is that we understand that there's an emergency for animals. And so we feel like we have to behave constantly as though, you know, as though we are reacting to an emergency, and we burn out. And so we have to, you know, the cliches about taking time for ourselves and sleeping and eating well, those are the main ingredients for staying healthy through all of this.
Absolutely. And I know exactly how you feel. I just came back from, I don't know if you were there or not. I didn't see you. Did you come to the Smithfield Tar Heel plant in North Carolina to the protest down there?
No, the photos were extraordinary.
Yeah, I was there. I'd actually never been to a slaughterhouse, and especially not the largest pig slaughterhouse in the world. The smell and the taste of the feces in the air and the death is just unbelievable. I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's something I think you should try to get in. I'm sure they're not going to let you through the door, but they're just, if just the outlying community, I think you could get some beautiful photos and sad photos. There's hog lagoons everywhere throughout the community, and all these poor African Americans walk in to the plant to work, and the more middle class white people actually drive in. So it's just crazy dynamic of this place is probably the size of 30 Walmarts. It's that big. It's unbelievable.
Well, you know, in fact, I think that because there are a lot of eyes and cameras there now, I think I actually would skip it because people are documenting well there. And so more and more, I tend to try to go where people aren't. There are a lot of people documenting the SAVE movement these days. So I've moved back from that. I mean, I was there in the beginning with Anita Kreintz and like just her and I and a few of us down on Pig Island. But now it's a worldwide movement, and there are a lot of cameras. So I'm like, okay, I'm not needed there. I'm not needed at Smithfield. Where am I needed? What groups are doing investigative work where they, you know, don't have good camera work yet, or the more elaborate kind of shoots where you have to, you know, plan for months before you go. Yeah.
Sure.
I have a question for you because you've been in the movement for so long. You've had the opportunity to see the transition and the way we've been evolving. What do you think about the animal protection movement as it is today and where it was when you began? Where do you think it's heading? What are your thoughts on it?
I think the short answer is that I really appreciate how dynamic it's getting and how it's grown laterally. I mean, we're not only doing the same kinds of things all the time now. I mean, we are lawyers and we are scientists, and you know, it's about food and laws and science and environment. The movement is increasingly intersectional, which is extremely important because animal rights does not exist in a bubble, as we know. And so, you know, the more we observe and agree that there's a lot of overlap, the more we can work together with all sorts of people and, you know, to advance animal liberation. You know, like animal rights is also environmental rights. It's also labor rights, as you've just mentioned.
And absolutely.
So we need to work in solidarity and probably fight a little bit less and a little bit more collaboration. And that's where things are going. But I like that we are attacking animal abuse from so many different angles. Now, we're not just reaching the public. We're doing corporate outreach. We are changing laws. There are political parties now. So I'm really happy to be in this movement right now because it's an exciting, changing time. We are creating change. We're reaching a lot of people, and there's nowhere else I would rather be.
Absolutely. And every protest I've gone to or seen or watched or live stream, every person I've interviewed or talked to, every vigil, it just, every time you're there, you can just feel that like this is going to be written somewhere and somebody's going to learn about it and be in complete disbelief that we had to even do any of this.
Yeah. I love your enthusiasm, actually, both of you throughout this. Like, you both sound really pumped. I love it. It's infectious.
Thanks. Well, I mean, I'm sure you've been at it a lot longer than either of us. I've been at it 4 years now, I think. And before that, like, what's that?
Well, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Yeah. I find it really hard to believe that people are like, yeah, you've been in this forever. I mean, it's been 15 or 20 years or something, but I honestly feel like I just got started.
Right. And really, I only got started in the first, like, since last year when I started Vegan News. So it's been slightly over a year. And I'm sure you had that moment where you were like, this is what I'm going to do. This is going to be my mission. And I'm going to go forward. And, you know, I'm sure you, like, had your own internal thing where you mapped out where you wanted to head towards.
Yes and no. I tend to have an 18-month plan.
And after okay. that, yeah.
Is that what you would, like, how do you lay out your 18-month plan? Because somebody who doesn't have a plan or is trying to figure out where they fit in the vegan movement, they're going to be listening to this or talking, you know, to somebody like you or Kevin or me or Ben and trying to understand. I get questions like that all the time in messages where people are trying to figure out where their place is and how they figure out how to do those things. So if you could like give them any tips or, you know, your path of how to get where you're at, that kind of thing, that would be great.
I will try, but I think the main
okay.
thing.
I know it's a tall order.
Well, I might go off topic. So just bring me back, rein me in.
Okay.
But I do know that the main thing is that we have to figure out not only what we're good at doing, but what we like doing.
Right.
You know, like I, you know, did leafleting and I did other things. And the thing that I was best at was taking pictures. And so, you know, some of us are, you know, best at doing admin work or coordinating groups. Some of us are people persons. Some of us are introverts. Some of us are scientists and lawyers, as I've mentioned. And so we're all going to be able to, you know, whatever our career is going to be or whatever our passions are, we can use them to make the world a better place. You know, people often, they you know, hear an interview with me and they're like, oh, well, she does photography and she has her niche and she has a thing. Like, I could never do that. But you don't have to. Like, there's a million different things that we can do to advance this movement. And
absolutely.
So that's a generic answer. I'm sorry, but it's the truth.
No, you're right. And people don't seem to understand, like, even if they're like a car mechanic, be the vegan car mechanic. Seriously. Like, I want to take my money and I want my money to go to somebody else who is in line with my morals.
Yeah. Yeah. There are always ways of influencing people and, you know, getting our messages out in like, yeah, big, bold ways and quiet ways. There's just a million things that we can do.
So speaking to the little pockets of society where they might not be thinking about the animal rights movement, I feel you said before that you would like to go where people are not and you would like to take pictures of those places. So maybe someone listening has an idea. How can they reach out to you? And do you have any thoughts like about where you would like to go that you haven't been yet?
Yeah. First of all, there are really interesting people doing trailblazing work, like going to communities where, you know, they are struggling with poverty and all sorts of socio-political issues. And the last thing on their mind is veganism or animal rights. But like, okay, what can we do there? Like we can start by empowering these people. We can start by growing gardens at the schools. Like, you know, there's just so many ways to tackle the problems that we're facing. But wait a minute, I'm getting off topic here. You asked, yeah, like where would I like to go? I'm really interested in observing and working with organizations who are in quickly growing economies like India and China. So that's in fact exactly what's on the agenda with me as organizations and people really, really ramp up here in North America and in Europe. I'm really curious to know what else is going on in other parts of the world. And I know that it's harder to have a voice in China, for example, because there's just so many different levels of oppression there and freedom of speech. But like, what is going on there? And then when you start to dig into it a bit, it's fascinating how many people are quietly working away on animal advocacy. So a few months ago, I went to Nepal to the Asia for Animals conference because I wanted to learn about who are the good groups in Asia? What are they doing? Who's doing really effective and interesting work? And how can I help them? And So now we're starting to have some shoots lined up in different countries. And with my new project, Unbound, which is about women on the front lines of animal advocacy, we have found, of course, we have found really many, many interesting women in Asia who are working for animals. So we're really excited about profiling them and just helping to uplift their organizations and their work.
And if somebody has an idea for you, how could they reach out to you?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. We get so many nominations and we really need them because obviously our little team can't know what everyone's doing. So the website is unboundproject.org and then just click on nominate or unboundproject.org/nominate And we have, we keep files on every single nomination that we get according to country, so that we can be like, all right, well, you know, we're in China this year, or we're in Bangladesh this year, and let's see who's doing what there. It's very exciting.
Yeah, definitely. Have you checked out some of the Facebook groups? There's actually a Chinese vegan Facebook group that I'm in. Somebody just invited me to it a couple months back, and every once in a while I go and check up, and there's a few people that I've spoken to through Google Translate here and there. And I mean, there are activists there doing pretty awesome work, but they, like you were saying, they, you know, their government is a little oppressive, so they have to be careful.
Yep, absolutely. There's a group called Veg Planet. Me, I don't know if you're or Vegan Planet. So the founder, Hazel Zhang, we have featured her in the Unbound Project. And Unbound also became a granting body this year. And so we gave away $100,000 to...
Wow.
Yeah, I know. So yeah, we gave away to Hazel and to 9 other women who are running fantastic projects which advance farmed animal issues.
That's great.
I know.
It's so great. I can't believe that. You're making such a huge impact. And I mean, China is such a developing country still that they can... they can cut around all of our mistakes, you know? They can avoid the coal plants and the nuclear power and go straight to solar. And they can avoid all, you know, they're already working on plant-based protein alternatives. The government's hardcore on it because they don't want their citizens to die early or have more health problems. You know, they're going from that angle and land and all that kind of stuff. It's just, it's really incredible watching everything blossom. And I really think China is going to lead the way eventually towards this. It seems like they are.
I hope so. I mean, they also have places, they have factory farms that they call mega farms that are, you know, the size of Smithfield, the way you described it. So there's a lot of big things happening. There's big industrial farming. There are big efforts for plant-based alternatives. And yeah, it's a really, really exciting time. And I'm looking forward to being there and to learning about what they're doing and to contributing.
What would you say to someone who wants to start out, they're an aspiring photographer, for example? I know there are many of them out there, and they might not necessarily see the connection between their hobby and activism. What would you say to that person?
Oh, I mean, hobby, activism, professional, it's just about, first of all, showing up. We need to show up. We need to not just think about going to take pictures or making films. It's just about starting. And the more you do it, the better you get, the more you learn about lighting and angles. I mean, as with any trade, you need to practice in order to get better. And then you might find that you're taking excellent pictures that are well received on social media. And then you might start thinking a little bit about marketing and how to further your images beyond the converted, so to speak, and beyond the people who are watching those Facebook or social media pages already. So it's a exciting thing because it can grow. The work that you're doing can grow in terms of quality. It can grow in terms of visibility. And the animals really, really need that. I think we need to think beyond, you know, shooting images quick, because, you know, this is an exciting thing that's happening, and then putting them on Facebook. And then, you know, 6 hours later, you've posted something else and the images just go down the feed and they disappear. And so what can we do with the images that we're taking? Well, let's get them into newspapers. Let's get them into like anywhere that we'll post them. Let's send them to journalists. Let's get more and more visible media talking about the images because they're important.
Yeah. And building on that, what would you say to somebody with, you know, finding their confidence to keep pushing and thinking that maybe they do have something to contribute, even photographic, even photography wise? Like, I know for a lot of people in the beginning, especially when you're just starting something like this, you're wondering, do I just suck and I don't know it? Or am I really as good as some people are saying, that kind of thing, as you're snowballing it and learning more and more?
Yeah. Mentors are important. And I had that. I started photography in university. I mean, I wasn't studying photography, but I took a black and white printing course. And then, you know, all of a sudden I had a community of people in which to discuss photography and look at each other's pictures. And so we're going to get a lot of general positive feedback if like you're just, you know, showing up at an event and posting on Facebook. But it doesn't mean that it's critical feedback. And so if you want to get serious about taking better pictures, you need critical feedback about what's working and what isn't. And not only do you need to search for that feedback, but you need to listen to that feedback. And
where do you recommend they develop that feedback from?
We could build communities of photographers, people who, you know, it can be a Facebook or social media community, in, or it can be a community in the city that you live in. Let's say there are 3 or 4 or 5 of you who shoot. You can get together, make little printouts, or, like, you know, look on your iPads and compare images and talk about, oh, well, wow, like, that's obviously the best picture we've seen tonight. Well, what makes it good? Right. You can also find mentors at photo schools, or, like, just find out, study photography, meaning, like, look at what's being published in New York Times, look what books are coming out, and why is it successful photography, and then set your bar there. Set your bar, like, not, the bar shouldn't be what people in the animal rights community are shooting. The bar should be as far as you want to take it. And so study those and, like, and reach out to those photographers. I mean, a lot of photographers mentor other photographers. I have mentored many people and I've had many mentors. Super important.
So I'm not sure how you allow everyone to use your pictures without, like, I guess maybe not in the beginning, but now you do. You allow everyone to use your pictures as long as it's helping animals. Is that correct?
That's correct. I always have, actually.
It's amazing. It's very noble of you. And I would imagine as you were beginning to do this kind of work, it was probably hard to make a living giving away your pictures for free and doing something that you're really passionate about that doesn't necessarily pay the bills. Was that hard at first?
You know, the goal was always to get the images out as far as possible. So since the beginning of my animal rights work, it's pretty well been used for free. However, I was able to do that because I, you know, alongside that had my career as a photographer. So making money from commercial work and weddings. And so I was able to phase out the commercial work over the years as more and more people donated to We Animals in exchange for usage. And we have monthly donors now. And it's taken a long time to get here because you need to build up your credibility and your reputation. And people know that I'm in this for the long haul and they know that I'm going to do a good job. And so that's why we have donors and that's why we get grants. And that's why we have staff now, which is so exciting. And so it's been a very long-term business model and I recommend it. And it's a bit, you know, it's not like a stable 9-to-5 paycheck, but, you know, there are major rewards from doing this work that are not financial. Just being able to help animals. I mean, that's it, isn't it? And so you find ways to make it work and it takes time, but, super, worthwhile. And I'm, as I've said a couple times today, like I wouldn't trade this life for anything. It might be a little bit unstable, but I have an incredible community and I'm trying to, you know, make a little change in the world. And if we all did that and more of us are doing it, we will turn things around, which comes back to your introduction to this talk that we're having. I mean, I really loved your enthusiasm and your focus on hope. And you've asked me how I handle the traumas and the depression. And it's because I choose every single day to focus on hope. I choose, you know, to look ahead instead of look behind or, like, you know, feel depressed and muddled and down about all the problems and all the suffering that is occurring right now as we speak. So I focus on change and, you know, one person at a time, one step at a time. And that's the best that I can do.
The requirements for using your pictures is just that they help animals, right? Is there any more to that? I mean, what if Maple Leaf Foods says we want to help animals at our facility by using Joanne MacArthur's pictures?
Yeah, hilarious. That is, you know, something we had to consider when we put together the form that you fill out when you go to the archive. So it's weanimalsarchive.org. There's over 8,000 images and they are searchable by keyword and you just pick the images you need for your campaign, your studies, whatever it is that you're doing to help animals. and then you just fill out, I think it's 5 questions, like, is this personal use? And there's a little thing that says, is this commercial use or is it for profit? And if it is for profit, then they don't get to just get the download. They have to, then an email exchange happens. And then either I could say, oh, no, I don't like that kind of for-profit use that you are using them for, or, you know, you are a big expensive company and you certainly can pay $100 or $500 for these images. So
if somebody wants to make a protest banner or a protest sign and put their words on it that would, you know, say like stop eating animals, or they could use your pictures?
Oh, yeah, they can use them freely, and people use them for that all the time, all over the world. I'm very proud to say, since we launched the archive in March, we've had over 700 requests worldwide, even from as far as Uganda, South Sudan, New Zealand, like all over the place, people are using these images.
Awesome. That's amazing. Incredible that you share that much.
Well, that is the point.
Well, yeah. Hopefully together we can reach that goal of animal liberation. So we are running out of time. Brandon, do you have any final thoughts for Joanne? Thank you so much, Joanne, for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
Definitely. Thanks.
Really nice Thank chatting, you. And I see what you mean about the time going really quickly.
Yeah, I just realized. I looked at the clock. 8:10. My final thoughts would be, you know, before I saw Earthlings, which is the final like straw in the puzzle that finally like broke me and made me vegan, I saw The Ghost in Our Machine months before when I was still not vegan yet. And, you know, I was just curious if you might be participating in another documentary at some point or working with, what was her name? Liz Marshall, I believe, again, or anything like that. Any projects like that down the road? Because I really enjoyed that film. It made a really big impact. It kind of primed me for Earthlings the next day when I watched that.
Oh my goodness. Liz Marshall is working on a new film called Meat the Future, M-E-A-T, the Future. And it focuses on Memphis meats and the movement towards alternatives. So Liz is doing that. I'm making short documentaries, like really short ones, between 3 minutes and half an hour. We're working.
Where are you posting those?
On our YouTube. So we have semi-regular videos on our YouTube channel, as well as Unbound project videos about women trailblazers worldwide. So short films and a longer film with the New England Anti-Vivisection Society. We're putting out a 30-minute film about alternatives to animal testing. So lots going on. And it's nice to have a team now because we can just do so much more.
Absolutely. That's great. I didn't know any of that existed.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again, Joanne MacArthur, for all of your work, for all the support, for animals, for helping them, for exposing the cruelty. I know what got me through a lot of the misery was knowing that it was at least being documented. And when you're not there taking the picture, the animal is still there going through that suffering. So it's important that we at least document it and show the world what's happening. So thank you for all the sacrifices you've made. And thank you for the work you do on behalf of animals.
Thank you guys so much. Great talking with you, and keep up the great work.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much. I really appreciate a lot of your pictures. And like I said, that film and seeing your journey in it was really impactful and helped me become who I am today.
Ah, I'm so glad.
All right, and we're back. What'd you think about that interview, Brandon?
It went awesome. Joanne MacArthur is a living legend, and it was great to speak to one of the heroes of the animal rights movement. I mean, she's been doing this longer than both of us put together, and it was just, she had a lot of good information, especially for new activists and even older activists, you know, some ideas, and especially if you want to get into some photography, she has some great tips, and I hope it helps people.
Yeah, I forgot to ask her about ag gag laws, although I'm pretty sure I know what her stance would be.
oh, yeah.
problem. But yeah, it was a great interview, and I'm really happy she was on the show and able to tell us all these websites that she's got. So if you are listening and you'd like to check out her work, go into the show notes, check out the links that we've provided, and know that anything she has done for animals is free and safe to use, so long as you're using it to benefit animals. So if you're doing a protest, if you're doing something to help animals, you can use any of these pictures. That's really powerful. So this is a great tool in the activist tool belt.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so today's news of the day, you're going to actually teach me something, Brandon. There's something I didn't know about. Some sales are dropping. Is that right?
Yeah. An egg company, food company in general, Calmaine Foods, the CEO has actually put out a memo saying that vegan alternatives are responsible for the company's first big loss of profits in over a decade. They're reporting a $74 million loss for 2017. And that's what they've found so far. So that's projected. It could be higher, and it's probably going to be higher.
So, and they said vegan alternatives is a main cause.
Yes. Yeah. The CEO actually, his name is Aldif Dolph Baker. He attributes the dramatic decline to the growth of the egg alternatives industry, which includes vegan friendly items like, you know, flax and tofu, prepared products, even, you know, potato starch, tapioca, egg replacers. And then one of the other things he actually notes in his memo was also about the avian flu epidemic that swept through, you know, the chicken industry in 2015. That had another huge impact, not only for the farmers, it got a lot of farmers out of it. It also had a huge impact on the psyche of the American public as a whole. You know, people got scared because a lot of people got sick. Many people died.
Yeah. I remember that for sure. So, I'm going to do a little role reversal here. Usually Ben would give me an excuse of the day, and okay. Since he's not here today, and I want to give you an excuse, and it's directly relevant to the news that you just cited. So here we are sort of cheering on the downfall of a major egg company because of our views on exploitation of animals. So what do you say to someone that says, yeah, but the jobs, what about all the jobs that this industry provides? What about the families, the hardworking farmers who have been doing this for generations? What about them? Why should we go vegan?
That can be broken down into multiple answers. First of all, let's start with the tail end of that. What about the farmers that have done this for generations? Most of them are they're losing their farms anyway. They're either being co-opted and controlled by, you know, the egg industry or other industries, or they're just being totally absorbed and losing their farms. And when it comes down to what about the jobs, there's other things that can replace it. The plant-based food industries are going to create far more jobs than, you know, a few farmers running horrifying chicken houses. We're talking about large industrial factories that'll be able to make plant-based products that will be cleaner and better for the environment, better for our bodies, and will most likely provide even more jobs and better jobs than there were previously there. Because if you look into it, a lot of these jobs within the agriculture industry are actually done by illegal immigrants, and they're not treated very well. People like Smithfield or Calmaine, their migrant population they use to work, they throw a few out to ICE, you know, every once in a while so they can do a raid to keep them happy, keep them satiated. And they have them live in these horrible conditions that the company provides, and they bring them up for part of the year, you know, and then they throw a few of them back to the wolves, basically, to our government, and they take them off, and they've just got this, you know, this whole thing, it's this underground handshake deal with the government between providing money for the economy and, you know, lobbyists and all that kind of nonsense. And then the other part of what I want to say about it is that when somebody says, what about the jobs? You're just totally blowing past so many living beings. Like, we're talking, by most estimates, around 50 billion chickens being murdered every year in the world for eggs. I mean, for what reason? When we have all these alternatives that taste exactly the same and they don't kill you, they don't destroy your body, they don't hurt the environment, they don't hurt the animals. So honestly, if this cost millions of people their jobs, I'm perfectly okay with that, because what somebody else feels and their pain comes first before any kind of money.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry to put you on the spot like that. Brandon had no idea I was going to ask him that question, or any question at all. So, well done. You answered.
I'm just trying not to get angry or use too much profanity, because I can get a little when it comes to stuff with animals.
No, it's right. I think the right answer is what you said, which is there are other jobs which will grow as a result of the decline.
Always. And you look at that argument when it comes to big oil or coal.
Exactly.
You know, coal mining is a horrible thing.
Exactly.
You know, black lung and cave-ins, and they die. That, like, oh, they're going to lose their jobs. Okay, so solar is taking their jobs, but solar is a way better job. They make more money. You don't get black lung, you know. Maybe you get a sunburn. Just be careful. Put a hat on. I don't know.
good thoughts. Good thoughts. All right. So for our activist tip of the day, you actually have some really good qualified advice, some expert advice for someone who could potentially be in a dangerous situation because of the activist work that they choose to do. So could you tell us a little bit about that, Brandon?
Sure. I actually was telling people about this previous protest we were at in Tar Heel about the mobile justice app from the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. They have a mobile justice app for iOS and Android for every single state in the United States. So just look up mobile justice North Carolina, mobile justice Pennsylvania, California, etc. And what this app does is, well, it does several things. But one of the key things it does is you can record video on the spot, and it streams straight to the ACLU, so that if an officer takes your phone and turns it off or smashes it or tries to destroy or erase the evidence, they can't. It goes straight to the ACLU, and you'll get a message from them. And if it's a serious incident, then you can file a report with them to let them know that it was a serious problem. And then not only do you have that video preserved, you also have the ACLU and their legal capacity, abilities behind you, ready to go with proof.
Yeah, that's a really powerful tool for anyone who's going to potentially be in a situation where they would need it. And you know what? You never really know when that situation is going to come about. So it's always good to have that app downloaded on your phone.
Yeah. Any state I go to, I always get the app for that state when I'm in that state. And it's not just for animal activism. I use it for other things. But it's not just for myself. You can do it as a witness too. If there's a nearby incident going on, you can be alerted. You can check the map and go to an incident to help film something that's going wrong and happening to somebody else. So any kind of activism you want to participate in, even outside of animal rights, you can with this. And it's, you know, I really feel it's our job as Americans to try and uphold what's left of the Constitution, because we're it. Like, we are watching. Oh, true. Yeah. Well, I'm sure you guys are having your issues with your country as well.
Yeah. So this is a really useful tool for anyone who is an activist. It doesn't matter which country you're in. I suppose that they don't have the ACLU's version for Canada yet, but maybe they have something like it. We should look into that. But certainly if you're in the USA, that would be a relevant tool to use. And it'll give you, as an activist, more confidence, more power to know that what you're doing is legal, is right. You're standing for justice. And if somebody is to silence you, if someone is to physically touch you, harm you, then you will have that documented, and you will eventually be righted in the court of law.
Absolutely.
And through public awareness. So it's a really powerful tool, and I'm glad you brought it up, Brandon. Thank you for that.
Yeah, and I wish more activists would use it. And in fact, in the app itself, you can click into the section under rights and read what your rights are. A lot of people don't know the rights that they actually have. Police will tell them what their rights are, but that's not who you need to listen to, because believe it or not, the police usually lie to you to get exactly what they want accomplished for whoever or whatever entity they are policing for.
Yeah. So, thank you again, Brandon. Would you like to plug yourself? How can people find you? You're a very passionate, outspoken activist, and we're very happy to have you as a guest host today. Where can people find out more about you and watch your show?
Vegan News. I try to do an episode every single Friday. I do special reports in between. You can find Vegan News on Facebook. The / is Vegan News Now. And we have a YouTube. That's also Vegan News. And me, Brandon Kirkwood, I have a public page. And I also have my personal page you can follow me on. I post a lot of things on there. And I'm about to start getting into some newer content that I haven't put out yet or really talked about. One of them is I'm going to be doing the history of animal rights and the animal rights movement and certain vegans. It's going to be kind of like small documentary chunks, kind of like a TV show type thing. I'm still working on that and getting it together. But different stuff like that. I'm slowly working on things and building myself up, and it'd be great to have everybody come and give me some feedback and watch what I do and, you know, help out.
Best of luck with that. We definitely look forward to watching your next move and supporting you along the way. So thank you, everyone, for listening. That wraps up today's episode, and we look forward to next week. Ben is usually in charge of the guests, and I have no idea who's booked. I'd have to look it up, but I promise you it will be a very exciting guest. So thank you all for listening, and don't forget to live vegan.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Live Vegan podcast.